This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
On the southern coast of England, there are seagulls flying higher, still higher than before. It's as though they've been hoisted like a flag. When the battle has been won, you can hear the ocean roar.
Good evening. You are listening to Love Sport Radio. Me, Matt Beadle, with you through to 11 p.m. That is around 58 minutes time. We've got the El Clasico fan show coming up at 10:30, where we focus on, yes, El Clasico teams, Barcelona and Real Madrid. But right now, we are focusing our attentions to the Seagulls, if you hadn't already guessed by that music. Brighton drawing with Wolves last weekend in what you'd have to describe as a pretty decent result, because Wolves now unbeaten in 11 games in the Premier League. In all competitions, I believe it is for Wolves. So on a very good run under Nuno Espirito Santo, as are Brighton, of course, following up that away win at Arsenal with a 2-2 draw against Wolves. And another entertaining clash between the pair. Diogo Jota with two goals for Wolves, and Neil Maupay adding to his tally in the Premier League, as did Davy Proper. It was very nearly a victory, but fair play to Wolves. They came back and instantly hit back through Jota, who is also forming quite the partnership there up front with Raul Jimenez. On the line now, we have Josh Goldsmith from the Together podcast. How are you doing, Josh?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, great, mate. Myself and Paddy were just discussing before you came on air the song. What do you make of the song that we use to intro this very show? Of course, a very famous song amongst Brighton fans. Do you like it? Do you sing it proudly as you're about to come on air?
I don't sing it proudly, no, because I don't want it to ever overlap and you hear me. but yeah, it's nice. Good song. I like it.
Right, let's get on to the nitty-gritty of the action. A pretty decent game. It was a good Sunday last week in the Premier League, and this game in particular, it wasn't 100% end-to-end, but it was nice and open, probably what you'd expect from two possession-based passing teams. I think this would have been a very different game last season, but now this Brighton under Graham Potter certainly take it to the bigger sides, and that is what Wolves are now, sitting in sixth in the Premier League, level with points. Level on points with Manchester United. It was a good game.
Yeah, it was a really entertaining game. And I think you're right. They should be considered one of the bigger sides in the Premier League. You know, they made Europe last year and they kind of fooled everybody with that really slow start. And they've kind of just slowly risen back up to that kind of area they finished last season. And I think all the eyes are, you know, on Liverpool and Leicester and teams like that. And I feel like they've just flew under the radar a bit. But They're a very good side, and if you'd have told me we were coming away with kind of 4 points from Manchester United, Leicester, Liverpool, Arsenal and Wolves, I would have bit your hand off for it. So I was really happy with that result in hindsight.
It was a mad couple of minutes, wasn't it, in that first half? Of course, like we said, Wolves taking the lead through Jota, and then Maupay getting the equaliser, and then Proper scoring like a couple of minutes later from a Trossard cross. A couple of people I want to talk about, but first, yeah, 2 minutes, you must have been jumping around your living room.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I think it was like a minute and 9 seconds from the first goal to the second one. It happened so fast. I couldn't believe what was going on, especially because, honestly, before that, it looked like Wolves were very much the better team and deserved to be in the lead. So for it to kind of turn around so quick, to go from kind of like, yep, okay, we're 1-0 down, they've been the better side, to, oh, we're 2-1 up, 2.5 minutes later, it was wild.
It's only the third time, bizarrely, that both teams have scored twice in the Premier League in the first half this season. First one was Norwich losing to Chelsea 3-2, and then Liverpool smashing Everton, of course, 5-2. But only three times that's occurred in the Premier League. The two players that I wanted to discuss. First, Dale Stevens, I think we have to say, is a player that's really gone under the radar in the Premier League. And I think this season, his performance levels have really, really gone up. And perhaps that is down to Graham Potter and also Leandro Trossard, who we've mentioned before on this show. But his cross for Proper, he is a really tricky, cool customer.
Yeah, Dale Stevens is definitely one of the most underrated. He is a very much a Marmite player for a lot of Albion fans, and that's only really because of the position or the role he was asked to fulfill last year, especially under Cuton. It was very negative and it was very kind of minimal. He kind of just sat in the middle of the park behind the, or rather in front of the front, in front of the defensive four, and really didn't do a great deal positive. And a lot of fans kind of took that on and really kind of demonized him for it. But this year, Potter has transformed him. You know, he is more than happy to play the ball forward. He really, you know, he's getting a couple of nice assists to his name already. His pass rate is just exceptional. And the only problem is he loves a yellow card every now and again, and that's going to make us suffer on Monday because he's unavailable.
And we'll get on to that game, of course, with the rivals, the Seagulls versus the Eagles in the second half of the show. In terms of the second half, I suppose there was a bit of energy lacking from both sides, really. I don't know whether the euphoria of that first half, the fast-paced nature of that first half, of course it was for Wolves in particular, third game in 7 days. I think ultimately, perhaps the games coming thick and fast took its toll on both teams.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that it was almost a case of, you know, we've just had a crazy end-to-end last 20 minutes of the game, and it was almost like they didn't want to lose that next goal. Both of them kind of felt like maybe it was next goal wins, even though they were clearly happy scoring them. So it did seem like they both took their foot off the gas, and, you know, with games coming up, I'm sure there was that psychological piece to it too, that they didn't want to risk anything too much. But it was a really weird change from that first half, which was frenetic, to the second half that was like pretty tame to end our Sunday. But speaking of Leandro Trossard as well, because I know you asked that, he has been a hell of a player for us since we got him in. Even in the friendlies that we were playing, he looked three steps ahead of everybody. And yeah, he picked up an assist again this week. It's just, I worry about him a little bit being a bit too much of a luxury player when we have somebody like Pascal Gross on the pitch too, who doesn't have a great amount of pace to be able to come back and defend. And I feel like him and Trossard also have that problem of, you know, defensive duties not being quite there. So I just wonder how much those two can coexist. But he is an excellent player.
Yeah, he is. I just want to quickly go back to Dale Stevens as well, actually, because, you know, 16 games he's played in this season. This is a guy who was signed for, you know, less than $1 million from Charlton. He's 30 years old now, and it's incredible how you see these players eventually get a chance in the top flight to prove their credentials. I mean, a relatively modest career. He's been, you know, he was with Drawston, of course, for a bit on loan. Oldham, Rochdale, Southampton. You look at the time he started out with Bury, of course. So it's never really had a stab at the top flight, and it's probably taken him a bit of a while. Like you said, Marmar, I actually saw him last season in the game, the draw with West Ham, and he scored in that game, but I have to say, didn't do a whole lot else. And I sometimes think that perhaps I believed he didn't do a whole lot else because he wasn't doing anything emphatic. He wasn't doing anything like Trossard, flair play. And sometimes that does get missed by fans. But in Stevens, who of course nearly scored at the end as well, there is a player there who, one, is going to give 100%, and two, has just got the basics correct. And I think sometimes that is taken for granted in football.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. He really is that engine that makes the team run, and he was that way when we were promoted into the Premier League in the Championship. He was, you know, like, people were desperate for him to stay with the club. He was out of contract at the end of that year when we got promoted, and when they went out celebrating afterwards, you know, there's Twitter videos of thousands of fans in the streets chanting for him to stay. he's when he was allowed to play with the way he can, he was loved. And, you know, that first season in the Premier League, he was a huge asset for the reason we stayed up. He made us so defensively solid sitting in front of Duncan Duffy. It was just last year has really kind of tainted that view, and thankfully he's turning it around again this year because he's been an outstanding player and he's so reliable. And now, like you say, he's able to go forward a little bit more. He's not flair, but he's doing a great job.
And good to see Maupay on the score sheet again. Successive games for him now. That is 6 goals this season. So, I mean, in terms of a ceiling for Maupay, what were you expecting from him when he joined the club? Did you have an idea of how many you wanted him to score? Were you expecting double figures? Were you just expecting goals? I mean, what were you expecting from Maupay?
That's a great question, because I think everybody thought the same thing. I think everybody just thought, please let this be a replacement for Glenn Murray. let's give us, you know, 10 to 12 goals in a season and be a main reason we stay up. And it looks like he's already halfway there, you know, with 6 goals in the season. And there is always that worry that he isn't going to be able to step up, because we've had a couple in the past, Jurgen Lacadia, you know, Alireza Yahanbakhsh also has struggled. So I think people were a little bit worried that he wasn't going to come to anything. But I think the overall hope was, you know, if you're spending £20 million on a championship striker, you hope that he can kind of take the mantle, especially at his age of kind of 23, and replace your cult icon that is Glenn Murray, and he's doing a good job so far.
Nice to see Murray come on, wasn't it? I mean, we kind of feel like we're at that stage now. He came on, played the last 20 minutes or so of the game, and it really is a case of, nice to see Glenn back on the pitch. It's kind of got to that stage, hasn't it? He's clearly had a conversation with Graham Potter, and I would imagine that was had at the start of the season, that Potter said, look, I play a certain way. You're not really going to be part of my plans, but you are going to be in the squad. You're a valuable member of this squad, and I don't want you to move on.
Yeah, and I think he's just the consummate professional too, isn't he? You never see him kind of, even when he was younger, you never saw any stories of him kind of kicking off back in the back locker room or anything. He's Mr. Reliable, and like you said, it's nice seeing him come on, because you know what you're going to get. You know he's going to win fouls. You know he's going to hold up the ball. You know he's going to waste time if that's what you need to do. And if you're looking for a goal, you know you only need to stick one ball in the box and you've got a chance. You know, I mean, I think he's 36 now as well, so he's not getting any younger. I think he's taking stock. He's probably going to move into coaching or something like that, and maybe this is one of those years that he's using to kind of get that experience under his belt. Obviously, I'm not sure, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was taking a lot of notes from Graham and what he's doing this year.
Yeah, a couple of great saves again, is what we have to say, from Matty Ryan. But we'll just brush past those, because otherwise it would be the Matty Ryan show every single week. I have to say to you, though, Josh, we have the Millwall fan show before you come on. And again, this is another player we've mentioned before, but he is really starting to come to the fore now for the Lions in the Championship. Jason Malumbi with a starring performance for them in their win over Bristol City in midweek. I tell you what, they are hoping that they can potentially sign him, but this is surely a player that Potter has got his eye on and thinks, yep, like Ben White, of course, who's on loan at Leeds United as well, that he's looking next season to thinking, these guys are really going to bolster my ranks.
Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth. These are, you know, Ben White is also on that list. They're players that they're still only 20, 21 years old. They're being outstanding for their teams. And, you know, it's like, it's the Championship too. They're playing in a very, very good league. And we have a couple abroad in Germany too, that are doing the same kind of job over there, apparently are doing very well. So I think that Potter is definitely going to gear up next summer for a very much an old guard moving out and a new guard, younger guard coming in. And I think he's lucky enough to be able to bring in people like Malumbi and bring in especially Ben White. The Leeds fans are obsessed with him. Mm-hmm. But I think that they probably need to be quiet, because they're just adding money to his price tag every time they sing his praises. So I think he will definitely be coming back, and Malumbi will probably be joining the ranks as well, yeah.
Yep, indeed he will. Okay, Josh, we'll be back with you in a moment. Of course, this is the Brighton and Hove Albion fan show on Monday night. It's the big game. Brighton travelling to Selhurst Park to play their rivals, the Eagles. We'll be talking all about that after this.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter, or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
The Brighton Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with you through to 11 p.m. this evening. Coming up at 10:30 is our El Clasico Fan Show, where we turn our attention to La Liga, of course, with Real Madrid and Barcelona, building steadily up to actual El Clasico on the 18th of December. Cannot wait for that one. And hey, if you want a match to match El Clasico, it's right here. It's the M23 Derby. The Derby, you might say, to end all derbies. Yes, Brighton travel to Crystal Palace to play at Selhurst Park on Monday night. Monday night football, 8 p.m. kickoff. Josh, I'm going to come to you first on this, because we are going to speak to Ruben Pinder, who is a sports journalist for joe.co.uk and a huge Palace fan. But Josh, first up for you, this rivalry, does it mean a lot? Does it mean a lot to you? Is this a must-win game?
Yeah, it does. I always try and act cool and think it doesn't until like the day before, and I start getting like that butterflies in my stomach and desperate to do one on them. So, it's one of those rivalries that, you know, a lot of people kind of like lift their noses at and think it's a stupid one, but to us it's very legit, and yeah, it's a big one. It's a big one.
Well, there we go, Ruben. It's great to have you on the show. Josh describing it as a big one, desperate to do him. He wants to do Palace. Your thoughts on this particular rivalry? I mean, this is one that it goes back to around the mid-70s, doesn't it? Mullery, Venables, Al, and comes right up to the present day. We've seen big playoff clashes, of course, and a big win for Brighton last season.
Yeah, it's a strange derby, to say the least, but it's one that the fans of both clubs definitely feel very passionately about, even if fans of other clubs don't quite get it, but that makes sense. You know, to be honest, for the past few days, other things have been occupying my mind. But I'm sure when it gets to Sunday, Monday, I'm going to get very nervous, as everybody does before a derby. And yes, as you say, it stretches back to several decades ago, and it's a very unique story that has led up to it. But I think in recent years, it's intensified with the playoff semis. Glenn Murray joining Palace now and then ended up back at Brighton and things like that. And like the last time I went to see this fixture, we lost 2-1 at Selhurst Park, and it was horrible. So hoping to set that right and have a repeat of the previous year when we won 3-2 at Selhurst Park with all five goals coming in the first half. That was one of the more enjoyable games against Brighton from the past few years. So yes, it is definitely a big one, and very excited and nervous.
Yeah, not bad form for Palace this season, you'd have to say. But last season, you mentioned the games there. A first time that Brighton had done the double over Palace since the 83-84 season. We've seen, like I said, some great contests, particularly the playoff one. And that always is the one that sort of sticks out for me, notably because of Wilf Zaha's celebration, I think, and his wide-eyed celebrating so much there at the Amex. But he's a player in particular, right? This is a guy who knows the fabric of Crystal Palace. He's the one that is going to be really G-ing the Palace players up ahead of this one.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, he's the most Palace player that you can find, really. You know, he grew up in Croydon, he left, he came back. He's absolutely idolised by everybody, despite his justifiable desire to sort of leave the club at times. He's still very much adored by everybody, and he really gets himself up for these games. I'm going to give myself a little plug here. I filmed a video with him the other day, which will be going out tomorrow morning, and he said that he is extremely ready for this game. He can't wait to get going. And yeah, hopefully he's on top form. Tactically, I think it might be wise to move him over to the right so that he can have a go at running at Dan Burn, who seems to be playing at left back or sort of like a left side centre back for Brighton this season, which is a strange tactical move, but it seems to be working in some form for them. So yeah, if Wilf is on his game, then we've got a good chance. If he's not, then we may struggle against the Brighton team, who admittedly do look quite decent this season.
There you go, Josh. What do you make of that one? Wilf Zaha really, really buzzing for this game, looking up for it. And to be fair, Ruben raises a very good point there. Dan Burn, who we've discussed many times on the show, of course, a rather imposing fullback. Not the type of character physically that you expect to be playing as a fullback. Do you think that Wilf's going to cause him problems tomorrow?
I think he will if he plays in the position that he has been in the past. But Potter seems to change it up so much, he could end up going with a three at the back and win back purposely to try and, you know, mark Wilf out the game, because I think you're spot on. Like, if Wilfred Zaha is on the top of his game, it's you know, Palace are going to be the favourites, especially at home. Everything seems to come through him, especially when they play us, because he turns it on massively. But if he isn't quite there, then it becomes a lot closer, and that was kind of why we did the double last season, because Zaha wasn't on top of his game, or I'm not even sure if he played in one of them. But yeah, he's a monster, and if he is left alone to take on Dan Burn out wide, that could be a bit brutal. So I'm hoping that Potter recognises it and doesn't allow that to happen.
And where are you seeing it, Josh, that Brighton can potentially hurt Palace in this one? Like I said, both teams in relatively good form so far this season. Palace 10th, Brighton 12th. I mean, it's going to be a close contest.
Yeah, and you're right. Like, it's also close. Like, looking at the league table, there's 3 points separating us. We're both on like a -4 goal difference. It's stupid how close we are, and we're both coming into a little bit of good form with a couple of wins and draws. It's gonna be one of those really tight ones where something stupid could change the entire game. maybe a stupid red card, maybe, you know, a penalty given away or something like that. It feels like something silly is going to change this game for one of the teams, especially on a Monday night. I don't know. It just has that feeling of drama.
Yeah, it certainly does. Ruben, I just want to quickly come back to the rivalry with you. And sometimes, like you said, other fans don't particularly get it. They don't truly understand it. Now, this is real, right, isn't it? It's a proper rivalry. This isn't any sort of fluff that's been, you know, boosted over social media. This goes back a long way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are some fixtures which social media has kind of tried to turn into a rivalry, which aren't, notably like sort of Watford and West Ham. But this is a genuine rivalry. And maybe the term derby isn't applicable given the distance between the two teams, but it's real. And it's the first fixture that you look for when the fixtures come out at the start of the season. It's the one you get most nervous for. It's the one that you really want to win. We're all bricking it and we're all absolutely buzzing for it at the same time. As I'm sure the Brighton fans are. There's a lot of vitriol in there due to how the rivalry began. The atmosphere is always different, and the players, Palace players haven't really turned up for the last couple, but hopefully that'll be different this time.
And a score prediction from you, Ruben, before you go.
I'm going to go for a 2-1 victory for Palace. One of the goals coming from a penalty, won by Wilfred Zaha, scored by Milivojevic.
Lovely stuff. Right, just so you can guarantee to us, Ruben, you're going to play it safe. You're not going to be carrying any hot coffee, right? There's going to be no hot coffee thrown over any opposition manager, right? That's not going to happen.
Absolutely not. Hopefully they don't do anything to alter the atmosphere of our dressing room.
Lovely stuff. Ruben Pinder, thank you very much for joining us.
Cheers.
That was Ruben Pinder, sports journo for joe.co.uk, and a huge Palace fan, as you can tell there. So, yes, Josh, I mean, the rivalry itself, we got to talk about it, really, just to touch on it, because a lot of people, I suppose, aren't fully aware of how it came to be the rivalry that it is now. And we have to go back to the 76-77 season. You've got Mullery, you've got Venables. Mullery's in charge of Brighton at the time. Of course, later went on to be in charge of Palace, which is quite a bizarre twist in this particular rivalry. Venables, of course, manager at Palace. The two of them, I think, played around five times that season. Palace managed to remain unbeaten in all five, but it was that FA Cup game, wasn't it? That was where it really, really kicked off. And the reference to the hot coffee, of course, is that Mullery claimed a Palace fan chucked over a big cup of hot coffee over him, and it all sort of got heated in the tunnel. Like Ruben said there as well, it got a bit heated in the dressing rooms as well.
Yeah, it also got a bit heated in the dressing rooms during the playoffs too, I think is what he was referring to. Somebody was accused of leaving some mess in one of the changing rooms, which kind of reignited it to a point that how it was back then. Obviously, it was before my time, but I've read all about it. It was a weird one. It's even weirder to think that we were the Dolphins before the Seagulls. It's just, I can't get over that either. But yeah, it is one of those weird ones. Like he said too, it's one that a lot of other fans don't quite get. But you know, this is a real one. A lot of people, kind of try and create that rivalry with us and Bournemouth. And there really hasn't ever been one. But this one is legit. And just when you think it's kind of starting to simmer, something kicks off that creates it all over again and brings that vitriol all back. So I'm hoping that doesn't happen this weekend, just because it's usually at our expense. So we'll see.
Yeah, no Anthony Knockhart to crash one in off the post this time, Josh. But in terms of the game itself as well, this is why we are football fans. You say it was before your time that this rivalry was created, but that is why we are football fans, because we buy into it. We buy into that about our club. A quick score prediction from you, Josh, and how you think the game is going to go.
I'm going to go with it being 1-1. And I think we may well nick a goal at the death, just to purely stick a knife in the wound.
There we go. Josh Goldsmith, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
That was Josh Goldsmith of the Together podcast. Brighton travelling to Crystal Palace on Monday evening for Monday Night Football. A team, of course, they did the double over for the first time in around 35 years, I should say, since 1984. So looking forward to that one. We'll give you all the reaction here on the Brighton Fan Show next week at 10 p.m. Next up, it is the El Clasico Fan Show.
This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.